Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, and my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest today, James Pickersgill. James, you're well known for your promotion of poetry. It seems to be a mission for you. For many years, you were the driving force of the Coburg Poetry Workshop, organizing readings and bringing poets from across Canada to Coburg. You've also been involved in other organizations and reading series, and now you're the secretary of PICS, Poetry in Coburg Spaces, and have been working very hard recently to bring poetry to the everyday lives of Coburg citizens. How do you think poetry improves community life, and what does the individual gain from being confronted with poems in public spaces?
That's a really interesting question. We had a fantastic event that was invited to do, downtown Coburg, the DBIA. They wanted to do something in conjunction with Valentine's Day, which was on Friday, so we did an event on the Saturday. Ted Ampson, the poet laureate, sort of conceptualized what we would do, which was we put poems up on empty store windows all over downtown, 200 poems, and then we had teams of two poets wandering around, going up to people and saying, would you like me to read you a love poem? And we solicited the poems through Facebook, which was a huge mistake. Because people all over the world are our friends on Facebook who write poetry, and they sent us hundreds of poems. Like, we received 500 poems in a very short period of time, a lot of them very high quality, some of them from fairly famous people, and we were like, wow, what an astounding response. We could only use 200 out of the 500, so we did that. But what the poets would do is they would just take a poem off the window and they would read that to the passerby if they said yes. I think 95% of the people we approached said, yeah, read me a love poem. It was remarkable the effect it had. Twice I had the experience of reading to a young couple, you know, and they'd say, sure, read me a love poem. And I'd be halfway through reading it, and I'd look up, and they'd have tears welling in their eyes. And I'd finish reading the poem, and they'd just give each other a big, deep smooch. And I'd think, wow, this is really working. You know, Ted read a poem to a lady, and when he was done, she gave him a huge hug, you know. We stopped another family who were three people, a man, his wife, and a son, 13 or 14 years old, something like that. And I had watched him, and he'd been taking poems off the windows. And his mom said, oh, his secret is that he really likes poetry. So I said, oh, well, you're going to love this. And Ted read them a poem. And then they went down to Somerville's downtown, and then they came back and wanted another poem. So we actually ended up reading them twice. So there was something magic about that. They would probably never access poetry, except we brought it to where they are, and that's part of Ted's concept with mm-hmm. As Poet Laureate, to bring poetry to where people are living their lives anyway. We usually say, if you come at 7 o'clock to this address, we'll read you some poetry, and 15 or 20 people show up. But when you bring poetry to where they are, that day we estimate that we read poetry to 400 people in the space of about 6 hours. Yeah, and the people, we were filming some of the encounters with video. We were recording some of it on audio, taking still photographs. And so we put that on Facebook as our way of thanking all the poets who sent us poems. And they were totally excited about it. People think it's boring. It'll never take hold of the public imagination. But we found it does if you bring it to them.
Yeah.
Another one of our events was what we call a window anthology. We just picked an empty storefront downtown, which was used to be the Garner's Flower Shop. And we noticed that the windows have 12 panes of glass, all of which happen to be around about the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. So we just asked poets, can we put up your picture and one of your poems? And we had 6 poets each time, 2 windows, so 12 poets each time. We did that 3 months in a row, and we changed the 12 poets each month. Both of you were participants in it. Mm-hmm. It was really funny because we would stand across the road at McCoubery's, but people would walk by, and it was like a magnet to them. It's like they couldn't walk by it without stopping to see what it was. They were like, what are these pictures? You know, what are these words? And they would stand there, so we were kind of fooling them into looking at it. Mm-hmm. And then they would look at it, and they would start reading the poems. And then you couldn't hear what they were saying, but they'd start pointing quite excitedly to one, and you'd think, oh, they've recognized the name, or there's something in the poem that really grabbed them or something. And then they would read the next one and the next one. And I thought, oh, we're fooling them into reading poetry. So when you put the poetry where they are, yeah, it's a much different experience than saying to them, take a chance, come to where we are, and we'll read you poetry. Mm. Somehow it captures their imagination.
Well, those are two very successful projects you've had. What are your new plans?
There was another little project we had, which we called ASA Poetry, As Soon As Poetry. Mm. We asked people to give us a whole bunch of short poems. They didn't have to be haiku, but we said to them haiku-length poems, mm. 3, 4, or 5 lines. And we put them in a digital photo frame, 2 digital photo frames, and we set the one to change the poem every 30 seconds, and we set the other one to change the poem every minute. There was close to 300 poems in there and all. So if you sat there for 4 hours, you could read all the poems, but nobody ever did. But what was happening is people were walking by and they're saying, oh, there's this quick little poem I can read. And people got in the habit. It was up there for a month, and people got in the habit of, well, when I walk by, I'll stop and see if I see a different poem than I saw yesterday. So that ASA poetry and the window anthology, we're going to repeat, but at the Northumberland Mall. Mm-hmm. For National Poetry Month, they're going to give us an empty storefront for each one. We're going to set it up there and just let it run for a month like we did downtown. And we also have another project that's going on for Poetry Month at The Human Being. There's a stream of poetry that not many people know about around here in big cities like Vancouver and Montreal and Toronto. They're excited about it. It's called visual poetry. So it's sort of an extension of concrete poetry that a lot of famous poets did. E.E. Cummings did it and so on. E.E. Cummings has a poem called Grasshopper, which when you look at it, it's not about a grasshopper. And you think, why is that called Grasshopper? But when you look at it on the page, you realize it's in the shape of a grasshopper, right. The typography. It's an extension of that. It's called visual poetry. And we're putting the art up on the walls. It's like poetry as art for the whole month of April in The Human Being. So we're quite excited about that idea. A lot of famous visual poets, as soon as they hear you're doing that, they say, oh, people don't usually pay attention to us. So they're sending us stuff. And we're kind of going, oh, we're getting some big names here. This is a shock. Yeah, so that's what we're doing for Poetry Month.
Yeah. That's great. How about reading some more poems for us?
Sure. One of the things we said was that I write a lot of love poems and a lot of poems for my wife, and I was asked, do I write other ones? And this one I wrote because people tell me I'm too bubbly. I hear that a lot. And you're too enthusiastic, and you're too full of joy, and you're too full of exuberance. And I always think, and this is what I'm getting criticized for. But, I talk with my hands, and I talk in a big way, and I talk in an excited way. And people say, take a breath. Like, settle down, dude. So one day I was reflecting on that, and I started writing a poem about it in my response to that. When I was partway through it, I realized what I was really writing a poem about was my daughter, who was in her late teens at the time I wrote this. And I thought, oh, she's learned all those habits from me. She has all those same traits, and she hears the same thing. You're too enthusiastic. You should settle down. So this is a poem I wrote for her when she was about 19. It will be a crime to be excited. Rhapsody, breathlessness, recorded offenses. Joy will mean law has been violated. Glee, bounce, animation, legal code incenses. Delinquents will be identified as happy people, crazy, about anything, keen, euphoric, edgy, fulfilled, juiced up, jazzed. The transported, the dynamic, will be wiped clean. The irrepressible will be oppressed. Felony lists will come to include charged dances, sparkle, enchantment, everything with zest. Illegal will be heat and all exuberances. Buoyancy, ardency, hilarity, effervescence will result in captivity. The scandal that sees outrage ignited in me now and in this future pizzazz is apathy, boredom. Whoever's dull has a dispassionate half-heart as close lass. Jumped red-hot, thirst-roused, tantalizing pep machine, tender spirit, orange life's little tangerine. Today, then, be moved, stirred as you are at 19. The misdeed is to not be eager pest, not wake exhilarated to chase quest. Blessed you are in this dazzliest contest. The word dazzliest in that poem comes from a movie called Snow Cakes with Sigourney Weaver, and there's this scene in it. She's an adult with autism in the movie, and there's a scene in it where she's playing Scrabble, and she doesn't play Scrabble the usual ways. She has a rule that you can use any word as long as you can provide a definition for the word. So in the movie, she makes up this word dazzliest, and she gives a beautiful explanation of what the word means. And so after the movie came out, there was this movement in amongst writers online to, as many of us as possible, should use the word dazzliest in our prose or poetry writing, so it eventually makes it into the dictionary. So I use the word dazzliest in that poem. Mm-hmm.
You got another one there, James?
I do. This is another poem, just to show I don't only write love poems. This one's called Mendeleev. Did you know that the inventor who created the periodic table of the chemical elements, formed a society for scientists, introduced the metric system to Russia, and researched the origins of petroleum, had a daughter who married a poet?
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much, James. Now, I know you were involved in putting out those little booklets.
Poetry Zone, yes.
Yes. Do you still do that?
No.
Have you got any published books by local poets at the moment going around?
No, and I've stayed away from print for a while. What happened with that was a lot of people really embraced that project, so I gave it to the Coburg Poetry Workshop as a thing that they could continue. Mm. And then there was some ins and outs that happened in organizations, and they never did. So then I said, so can I have it back? And they said yes. So I think I will revive it, but there's a lot of thought that maybe print isn't the way to go anymore. It's not the way to access an audience. So I have to think. It was very popular. It's weekly, 4 pages of poetry, often 7 poems or something like that, depending on length. And it sold for 25 cents, and we sold a lot of copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bought quite a few myself. So, to our listeners, if you would like to connect with us and send comments, queries, or suggestions for future programs, write to us at wordonthehills@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you, James, for contributing to our special celebration of Poetry Month. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.